Be calm, Tamar's on.
Welcome to Tamar Talk, where music is constant and discovery is endless. Now your host is ready to tell it all, Ashley Tamar!
Hey everybody, what's up? Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to me. It's Tuesday, November 7th, and you're listening to episode number 6 of Tamar Talks Radio. I want to say thank you guys firsthand from the bottom of my heart for listening every single week, tuning in. I know it's been very trying throughout our times and what's going on in our world, but you're taking time to listen to the empowerment that I bring to you, that I hope is empowering you and encouraging you and inspiring you. And I have so many things coming up that I want to share with you, where you can win tickets to see me perform in my new Broadway show, A Night with Janis Joplin, where I play Nina Simone, Aretha Franklin, a Joplinaire, and I get to use my opera chops once again by singing Summertime from Porgy and Bess. So stay tuned for that. But this interview is pretty special because we are going to be hearing firsthand information from my cousin-in-law. Is that a word? I don't know. Is that a name? I don't know. I think we kind of decided it is. And I still haven't met him yet, you guys. But he is a world-traveled, well-versed, well-educated, wise young man, a drummer who has played with the greats such as Erykah Badu. So please enjoy this Tamar Talks podcast with Gino Locke Johnson Iglehart and listen to the end of it, because you will get to hear his new original single that I might say is really, really funky. You guys, give it up for Gino Locke Johnson Iglehart. Mr. Gino, it's great to have you on Tamar Talks Radio. Thanks for agreeing to be on here and tell your story.
Thank you, Tamar, and thank you to all the listeners of this fine broadcast. Yes, I use the word broadcast still because I'm an old fogey now.
Well, people don't know a lot about you, and people don't also know that you're my cousin-in-law. Is that a word?
That is a word. It exists. If it did not, it does now, and it is very much true. Yes, we are family. Yes.
Well, listen, I have your bio, and I am just blown away at looking at your YouTube and, first of all, just seeing the relation to my husband. It's hilarious. But I want people to know from the musician side and now with you having a new song coming out, and that's the business side. I want you to tell people not only who you work with, but like, how did you get your start as a drummer and just touring the world?
Sure. So church boy, you know, roots, just like pretty much everyone else within the industry. Everyone in my family is a minister of some sort. Pastor, missionary, bishops, the whole thing, you know. Shout out to the Church of God in Christ. That's that life we live. And that's where I cut my teeth. Started playing drums at about 3 years old. And at that point, it was just I liked to hit on stuff. One of my uncles happened to be, shout out to George Cleanscale down here in Dallas, Texas. He happened to be the first professional drummer that I ever saw. And he was the drummer for my grandfather's church, Dr. S. E. Mitchell. And he would let me sit on his lap, and I played the top half because I was too short to reach the kick drum, too. And he would work the kick drum, but I had rhythm and timing to where I made that work. I made it fit. And so no formal training at that time. You know, I was like any other normal kid, sports fanatic. I played soccer my entire life and actually played a little semi-pro ball when I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, my freshman year of college. So music as a profession, I didn't even consider that until after an injury playing soccer. Like, that was going to be my ticket. I was headstrong. All my efforts were into that. It took me far, and then I had an injury that wouldn't allow me to run the same ever. And so I said, well, you know, I kind of still have this drum thing. I love music. You know, I love to play drums. And I got more and more serious about it. Took a jazz study series with the great, late great Alvin Batiste at Southern University. I did band and things in school, And of course, you know, I'm like a obsessive compulsive personality guy. Whatever I enjoy, whatever I do, I give it 250% of me. So I was all about music in school, but I was also all about sports. So I just split the difference, and it just kind of worked in my favor. I say all the time, we're all one phone call away or one person away from our big break, and I met that person at Friendship West Baptist Church here in Dallas, Pastor Freddie Haynes, when I was about 23. He happened to be my really close friend, Mr. Gino Young, who was coming straight from Howard University and going on the road with Erykah Badu, and then the dots just started to connect, and, you know, before you knew it, in a matter of months, I was a professional touring musician.
Wow. You gave me a lot of questions to kind of ask and piggyback off of. So you said your rhythm and timing. I know when you work with other musicians, that is a big thing. It's like the drum 101 of having pocket. And so I read that you lock into the groove and hold it hostage. Is that where Locke Johnson came from?
You are correct. Yes. so I play with several different bands outside of having my own band, Raphael and Ivory Jean. And one of the first organized bands that I played with or was a part of was one that kind of was birthed right kind of precursor my Badu days. It's an outfit called Camp Wisdom, and it's really like the I don't want to say A-list guys, but there's a tier in every city and every organization. There are tiers, and so these are kind of like the top tier guys within our musical sector here. And we just gelled, and we all grew up around this one street called Camp Wisdom, and so we called the band Camp Wisdom. We were recording with an artist called Ndambi, this record called Tuning Up and Co-signing. Ndambi is the godmother of what you know as Neo Soul. Like pre-Erykah, pre-Jill, anybody that was claimed to be doing Neo Soul, it was born in Ndambi. And we were doing her record, and I was trying to learn the part the same time the bass player was in the studio, which can be hectic. He's in one room, I'm in the next, but we can all hear. And he just yells out, "Golly, Locke Johnson, let me learn the song first." And there came the name. And it just, you know, became this running joke with the band. But everyone, you know, including Ndambi, she was like, "That's it. Like, that's what you do. Like, Locke Johnson, you lock this groove in and you don't release it until it's time to let it go." And for the past 20 plus years, that's been like the other persona of me, Gino Locke Johnson Igard.
Well, that's interesting in itself because it sounds like you had a natural born gift, and although you studied it to some degree, can you tell young musicians something that I stress all the time? Can you tell them how powerful it is to keep honing in on your craft? Like you said, in your city, you know, you guys worked together. You worked with the A-listers in your city. And a lot of the young musicians are all into this, I want to get on tour right away. And they don't realize, like, every day is a lesson. So can you inspire or encourage someone how important it is to work with what you have, like you did, and how that opened up the doors for you to work with? And special shout out to Ndambi. I am a huge fan of her, by the way. Can you give some pointers to that, to the young musicians, and really tell them how important that is to keep working with what they have, basically?
It's one of the most important things that you can do outside of just keeping your name clean. Because once you tear up your name, you don't have anything else to stand on. But knowing how to work with people and work for people, knowing what the difference is very, very important. Of course, 2 and 4 is always going to keep food on your table. Like all those licks and everything, that's cute and that's cool, and that works for YouTube and Instagram and all those things when you want the oohs and ahs. But if you want to work, knowing how to just be a disciplined musician and knowing how to, I'm not going to say go along to get along, but know what your role is. And then when you feel like your role has expired, then start looking for the next thing that's for you. You don't have to stay in a situation and be miserable Everything expires at some point. But knowing how to work within the context of being a good role player, be selfless, do the best job you can do while you're in there, take the job knowing that you're only there to make the job better for whoever comes behind you. You'll work forever, and you'll be happy in what you do. And you'll really never, you actually will never work a day in your life because you're doing what you love. So, you know, keep all those things in mind to all the young cats. Like that 15-second or now 1 minute of fame on Instagram with your video, that's great. And one repost can change your entire life. But that's such a long shot. You have better chances of making it into the NBA than being a professional touring musician. And so you got to keep that all in perspective. Create your own lane, your own avenues, your own brand, you know, and be happy in what you create and know it's good enough to go as far as, you know, God will take you.
Well, Gino, I appreciate you confirming something that I talk about all the time, which is creating your own lane. But at the same time, what else can you say when you said it perfect? Like the statistics are even saying you have a better chance in the NBA than a touring musician. Where do you see music is now? Like what are some of the artists that maybe you still listen to that you're learning from? Maybe that you're looking at their YouTube videos. Who is that for you right now?
I think music is in a great place. I think the music business is hurting because everything is so accessible now. Everyone online is a music critic, where now you don't have to send your music precursor to Vibe and Source and get a dope write-up, you know, and so that people will kind of know before it gets out, oh, yeah, you know, the experts are saying this is dope, so let me check it out. You're getting the music like the day it was created most times. But through SoundCloud and all of these other mediums, you know, putting snippets on the gram and all of that, like, you're hearing it as it's being created. Esperanza, like, gave you her whole record that you can go buy, but you were going through the process with her. Like, that's never been done. And so it takes away some of the mystique of what we do. It's a beautiful thing, but the music business part suffers. So the creation part of music, I think it's evolving. Of course, we're always going to have crap. People are going to do stuff for the shock value and just because so they can say that they put a song out. But real
right.
artistry, like, I mean, the PJ Mortons of the world are alive and well. Bilal is yet and still one of the most enigmatic voices of our time. So many other artists that are, you know, like staking their claim, even on the gospel side, like, Tamela Mann, we've known Tamela Mann to be one of the dopest voices we've ever heard, but she's just now getting her just due, and you're really seeing, like, wow, how much of a powerhouse she really is. It's another artist I really dig. It's actually a group, Wolfpack. You know, I really love them. Roxana Maurice, of course. I'm old school, so I still listen to a lot of Billy Ocean and Sting. Artists right here from our area that are pushing the envelope. It's a band called Ghost Note, which is a percussive outfit with members from Snarky Puppy, the rhythm section, Robert Spud C. Wright and Nate Worth, Sean Martin, Seven Summers, Gino Young, which is kind of like our godfather of soul, Keith Young, who was once signed to Hidden Beach. He had a song with Ndambi called When We Were Alone that did really well back then, and he's got a new outfit and kind of a new persona, the Medicine Man's Traveling Revival. Jermaine Dolly is one of my favorites, Jonathan McReynolds. You know, it's so many. Rhapsody is changing the game, you know, hip-hop side. So music is out there. I never listen to people when they say, man, ain't no good music out there. It's like, no, it is. You just got to know where to look. Like, it exists. Seriously, just go online, and you're going to find great music every 3 seconds. It just got to speak to you, you know. Tommy Sims, rest in peace to Prince, you know, like, their music is living forever. So it's always going to be something to inspire you. You just got to know where to look.
Well, before I let you go, you said something else that's triggering the next question I have. You're in Dallas. Dallas is now, I read, is the fourth or fifth in the market for not only live music, but for film and television. But according to Billboard, They're saying Atlanta is becoming the new southern city for music. Can you kind of touched on it about Dallas, but what makes Dallas, and also can you encourage artists about the power of owning their territory? Can you give us a snippet of what that means to really take ownership of your city and not feel like you have to be in LA and you have to be in New York?
Okay. I'll start by saying I'm definitely a champion for my city, but I am a champion for the arts community here. I believe in it. I have ever since I've been a part of it. I love it to its core. I fight for it even when people don't know that it's for their good. And there are a lot of cats like myself who have that same belief. It's like, listen, you know, you don't have to move. You don't have to go away to try to build. Yes, you know, sometimes you do have to go away. Hell, even I moved away. I've lived in Jersey, you know, I've lived in Utah, I lived in New Orleans, I lived in Atlanta, you know, all trying to build my career. So sometimes you do have to get away to get some refreshing.